One of the most frequently asked questions from our friends of DeSoto is, what is a live Greatest Gen show like?
What it's like is a recorded episode, but just tons of live fun. We show clips from the films, and we party with the friends of DeSoto. It is a raucous good time.
It really is. And what you're about to hear is one of our favorite live shows from last year's tour. It's the tour where we gave the Greatest Gen treatment to Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
In a lot of ways, this year's tour is a sequel to last year's tour. So this is our Washington, D.C. show from last year. And if you are interested in coming to Greatest Gen Con 2, Star Trek 3, head to greatestgentour.com. Tickets are still on sale. And we are also raising money for the Amazon rainforest. We're giving a bunch of money to Amazon Watch based on priority on messages and merch sales. So if you'd like to support that cause and also take in a great night of comedy, greatestgentour.com. Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Franica.
You're milking it, Adam.
I wanted to wait until your applause was fully gone. I wanted to know that those claps were for me.
I like that we built our names into the roll-in package so that we could get applauses for our names two times before we even start doing anything.
I want all the pops tonight.
Hey, what's up, Washington, D.C.?
That's an easy pop right there.
That is an easy pop. Thank you for coming out. We got all of our friends of DeSoto in the house. Adam, I went to our precursor to Starfleet, the Space Force, the other day.
Is that a thing already?
I actually went to NASA, which is the real precursor to Starfleet, and I got to take a tour of the Goddard NASA thing.
Is this going to be one of those things where you like show me your slides from vacation?
If you insist. Let's see this first slide.
You're really going to do this, aren't you? This is so dumb.
There's me and listener AJ at the largest clean room in North America.
What is this face that you're making?
It's like, this room hella clean.
It looks like you're clenching on something.
You know I'm always clenching on something. Let's see the next one. So AJ works in climate science. Still clenching on this one. This is some kind of satellite that they're going to put in outer space to take pictures of something. AJ works in, like, he's developed a tool to discover how much carbon and methane are in the atmosphere. And specifically,
I'm going to guess a lot.
He can tell the difference between like your farts and a cow's farts with his instrument.
No one can tell the difference between those two.
I that's what I said, man. I thought that was pretty amazing. Like, science has really gotten a long way here.
Can I put a pause on this story for a second? I know you have a thing.
I don't have a thing.
And I don't mean to stop you.
Do you want me to go?
This is the first time this has happened to me on the flight out here. The person in the seat next to me, middle seat person, I'm a windowman. I think everyone knows this.
I'm an aisleman, and that's why we get along so well.
Right. The middle seat had a cat.
Wow.
And a cat carrier.
Uh-huh.
And this cat was stowed.
So they bought a seat for their cat.
No, this was stowed under the seat in front of them.
Oh.
This cat.
Oh, so there was a person in the seat and a cat under the seat.
We got through 5 hours of this flight without anyone knowing a cat had been there.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as the plane came around on short final, the cat knew it was on its way home.
Yeah.
And became extremely comfortable. And dropped a shit that was so noxious. It was incredible. It was so bad. And everyone in eight rows next to us was like grabbing for the bag. It was in my nose and my eyes and my mouth.
Yeah.
It was awful. So anyway, that's how I wanted to interrupt you.
Now you know what it's like to share an elevator with you.
Could this thing detect the difference between cat shit and cow shit?
AJC was pretty smart. I think it probably could, Adam. Let's see the next picture. So then he took me out to this site where he was like, this is a little off of the Goddard campus, but they like there's like a radio telescope there. And there's he was like, this is all like the off-book stuff that NASA does. And I was like, okay. Like I'd seen AJ at a live show before, but at this point, to me, AJ is a stranger from the internet still.
The trailer told me that this was off book. This looks like where they shot Arrival, the Charlie Sheen movie.
Yeah, it was the movie crossover event of Arrival meets Deliverance. next slide, please, Rob. We got to see where Darth Vader hangs out with his helmet off. And then AJ,
what's inside that thing? Seriously,
I have no idea. Probably like a laser telescope.
You didn't have the clearance to know.
I was surprised we were there in the first place, but he keeps telling me like there's this basement room that we really want to get, and so
no, there's no such thing as a story that ends well after that.
I know, like it's like we have made jokes about this, me and AJ, already. Like,
would you help me move my telescope down into the basement? I got this great big telescope.
Rob, please show the next slide.
Yeah.
So that's why I only have one of my kidneys.
Why did you wear the white shirt? Wow. Wow, you lived to tell the tale.
Yeah.
What was down there?
It was just a dank room that needed to be like
dank
dehumidified.
And
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was
my trip
to NASA,
Adam.
Sounds
like AJ gives great tour.
Yeah, gives great tour. He bought me some very nice grilled chicken at a Peruvian chicken place. It was awesome.
I think that was a bigger pop for Peruvian chicken than for NASA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, one thing has actually done something to, like, advance our knowledge of what's delicious. They wouldn't let
maybe, maybe stop doing poop science and get into the chicken game.
Yeah. You taste how good this is? It's because of the grill marks, dude. But we didn't come here to talk about NASA. We came here to talk about things in the future, right, Adam?
I mean, we could.
We could.
We brought all the things. We brought the drops.
We did bring the drops.
We brought the bells.
We did ring the bells. Let's talk about these bells for a second. So,
by all means.
Have a drink. Get comfortable. when we edit an episode, we add a little ding sound effect when a phrase seems funny enough to be the title of the episode. But on live shows, we attempt to live ding the title. So at some point tonight, we will find out what the title of whatever this is, and that will take the form of a... So that's what those are there for.
It's worked every time.
Yeah.
I don't see it not happening here.
Yeah, I'd say that there was like one, at least one show last year where it didn't work.
Is anyone having a hard time with this? This is what we look like.
My favorite is when people are like, yeah, I mean, I knew what you guys looked like, but I had the voices reversed.
At every show. And I never know how to take that.
Yeah.
Every time I take it as an insult, and I know I shouldn't.
Yeah, it's like both, I guess. Very high compliment and also very insulting.
Someone comes up to us after every show and is like, wow, like, so this is you guys. Weird.
We're going to talk about a motion picture name of Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan tonight.
Has everyone done their homework? Has anyone not seen the movie by a show of hands? We got a couple.
Okay, well,
okay.
It's going to be permanent.
Has anyone never heard a Greatest Gen show?
Oh, a couple of hands go up.
That's great.
A lot of couples where one of them was dragged along by the other.
A lot of dutiful spouses.
But yeah, so what do you say we get into this, huh?
All right, let's do what we came here to do.
We are going to now review for you Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. This button usually works.
We brought all the interstitials to drink during.
So, we haven't seen the crew of the original series Enterprise in quite a long time.
Some people haven't seen them at all because they avoided watching the first movie.
Yeah. But, you know, when you're the outgoing crew of the flagship, what you do is all retire all at once and become instructors at Starfleet Academy. That's actually not true, because Chekhov is still a commissioned officer with a gig. He didn't get to stay on the Enterprise, though. He's like, they're like, yeah, we'll make you first officer or something. Not this, though.
Chekhov still seems like he's trying, though. This is like a puffy Top Gun.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so this is a big scene because we get to see the kind of out with the old of
Now, the old is definitely not out in this film.
I mean, we talk about this scene, though, right? Because, like, this movie was coming out and it leaked that a beloved main cast character was going to die in this film. And they rewrote the beginning to throw people off the scent of who that might be. Which is cool, right? Because, like, I feel like things leak online all the time now and, you know, people, like, look for the leaks and some people are like, I don't want to know anything.
It's normally a really bad sign if a film is being written on set.
Yeah.
But the idea that they were writing this scene at the audience,
yeah,
is pretty great.
It's great, and it's also, like, I don't know, it's a great head faint. Let's see the scene that we are talking about.
Alert, Klingon torpedoes activated. Alert.
Evasive action. Engineering, damage report.
Main energizer hit, Captain.
Engage auxiliary power, prepare to return fire.
Shields collapsing, Captain.
Fire.
Community theater doesn't usually have this much pyro.
Right in the butt.
You know, Metallica had to cancel a tour for that amount of pyro. Ben, if you were to land on an original series crew person, like head in lap.
Yeah.
Whose lap would you choose? Like from softest to firmest.
I'm DeForest Kelly, and I know that my character's going out down close to the end. Now everybody knows that Sulu has the hardest body of anybody in the original series cast. What DeForest Kelly presupposes is maybe that lap is pretty comfortable.
Maybe DeForest Kelly doesn't do it for him.
Yeah, I feel like Sulu might have been like, hey, come on, man. Yeah. Get the fuck off of me. Fucking think this is. We also get to meet Savick, introducing Kirstie Alley, right?
Right.
She got this space and she was like, I like it here. I'm going to stay.
Is there a volcano I could shoot these torpedoes into?
Oh, we can have that drop, right? Yeah.
Yeah, pre-Scientology Kirstie Alley.
Yeah. Yeah. And she is testing on the Kobayashi Maru test. And it is a tough situation. Like we've seen all these characters die, and then like the lights go up and like the view screen opens like a huge door, and in walks Paunchy Kirk. Dean of Savick.
He's like, is the fog machine gonna cover up these hair plugs? More fog. But he looks great, though. This is this is the apotheosis of hero shots.
Totally.
Like, it's perfectly framed.
If you're gonna introduce your movie's central badass, like, no better way to do it than slide open the view screen and have him backlit like this, like, it's like, yeah! it's cool. Like, but it does not make a ton of sense that all of these very capable officers would be sidelined in this way. Like, oh yeah, we just all instruct at the academy now.
You don't take them off the board unless there was a scandal, right? You know there was a scandal.
The only other headcanon I can come up with is like, one thing about that bridge is that everything is like meticulously labeled. Like there's a no smoking sign on that bridge. And there's like a sign on, there's like, you know, the sign you see on like P.F. Chang's, it says, please wait to be seated. There's like one of those.
I don't go to that fucking place. Are you serious?
Specificity, I don't know. whatever. But it says no unauthorized access to the simulator.
Yeah.
Like maybe the Kobayashi Maru is like such a big secret that you need like really high level officers to administer it so that the secret doesn't get out.
I would have loved a like 5 second shot of Kirstie Alley like stamping out a cigarette butt before going in. Just chain smoking future parliaments.
That would have been pretty cool. We do catch up with Chekhov, though. He is stationed on Starship Reliant. He's the first officer, and the Reliant, captained by Clark Terrell, a.k.a. Dathan, a.k.a. Darmok and Jalad.
The Reliant being a Del Sol-class starship.
Yeah. Yeah. They're looking for a dead planet, a planet that is totally lifeless. And
not even one life.
Right. Like if there's any like hint of life, like that's bad news, right? Like they call up this scientist lady and they say, like, hey, like we think that there might just be like something caught in one of the sensors. We don't think that there's any chance that there's life down there, but like if there is, we'll just transplant it for you. And she's like, no, you gotta be sure. And so the captain and the first officer of the Reliant and only the captain and first officer of the Reliant beam down to this planet that they are meant to survey just to check things out. They're gonna leave the planetary survey to the two highest names on the org chart.
Chekhov and Terrell are like, should we wear the suits with the handles?
Yeah.
We should probably wear the suits with the handles, right?
It's very convenient if anybody needs to pick you up.
What about a helmet big enough for something to be put into it? and 80s hair.
I feel like this is the helmet that Worf needed in the last movie that we did.
Yeah, hard to agree.
Yeah, big, you know, the bob fits right under that. But so they beam down there, right? And they do find something that indicates life, and that is like a couple of semi-abandoned looking trailer homes.
Kind of looks like that field trip you took earlier.
Not dissimilar, yeah.
Looks like they were watering the grass out there, but
yeah,
not a lot of love for those trailers.
No. I mean, it's a very lush environment around D.C. So they, I mean, not in D.C., obviously, because the swamp has been drained.
Hey, is, by show of hands, anyone in the house currently under investigation? Yeah, quite a few.
Are there any fat cats in the house? Anybody that makes room, like, deals in back rooms while smoking cigars. That's
you
what
guys can
for.
Get your summons on your way out to the merch table.
That might happen to us while we're on stage, right? You've been served.
When in hell, Rome? Yeah, that was a slow burn.
They go into these trailers and they do find more than signs of life, right? I believe we have a clip, Adam.
What the hell is that?
Every single Ayn Rand book is on that shelf.
Botany Bay. Oh no. We've got to get out of here now. Damn.
Hurry.
What
about the car?
Never mind. Hurry.
They bought their seatbelts on eBay. There's no way to know if they're safety rated.
This is an argument my wife and I are always getting into.
Yeah?
I personally believe I'm a SETI Alpha 6. Oh. She will tell you and anyone else I'm a SETI Alpha 5.
I try to have conversations like that with your wife.
So
why is she always bringing it up?
What's Adam's dick like? We'll get censored on iTunes. We'll get censored.
I think we can do better.
I think we can do better.
Also, what my wife says. That's fucking teamwork right there.
So the residents of these
that was like the California games of dings. Like we were keeping that hacky sack up in the air.
Yeah. the residents of these shipping containers come back, and among them is Khan Noonien Singh, a villain from some episode of TOS, I guess.
An experience that Chekhov couldn't possibly understand because he wasn't on the show.
Did you do research for this, Adam?
I did the bare minimum because you want to know why? I don't want to be accosted in the meet and greet after this show by a super fan.
That is fair enough. So he was not on the program at the time of Space Seed.
He was not.
I mean,
we've been doing that way too much in public.
Here's my headcanon. He worked on the ship, but we just hadn't seen one of his shifts yet. So maybe he was like in the...
He was real low level.
He was in the galley like eating a bowl of cereal or something and like Khan and his
You think they got the Russian in the galley making dumplings for the crew? You think that's what's happening?
Maybe, yeah. He makes a mean pierogi.
I'm ready to believe that.
I feel like Chekhov could be pretty awesome in the kitchen, TBH. I don't know if there's any like canonical Chekhov cooking, but... I'd be curious.
We would have to watch more than two episodes of the original series to know. Both of us are unwilling to do that.
Yeah. But Khan has
a lot of anger surrounding what happened to him, right? Like,
and justifiable anger,
because he was left on a pretty good planet, but it got knocked out of its orbit when a pretty bad planet blew up, and now it's a dump, and
no water.
Wait till you see the pool. But
the right people get that reference.
But the whole thing is that Admiral Kirk is a war criminal. He says this is the Alpha 5, but he sells the Alpha 6.
Those are leadership pectorals. Way to let that go all the way to the end.
Yeah. Sometimes we do finish a music bed. It's not advisable, but... So he picks up Chekhov, or I think, does he pick up Chekhov by the handle? And then they reveal what that was crawling around under that sand, and it's the Seti eel, the only remaining indigenous life form on the planet, which has the unmistakable similarities to nubbin bugs.
Khan mentions offhand that how these things had wiped out a bunch of the remaining crew on the planet. Like, is someone not shutting the door to the trailer? Yeah. How do those things get inside?
I would love to see the like dad Khan that's like really like he's always on the thermostat like adjusting it, and like somebody comes in without closing the door and is like, "Were you born in a barn?" From hell's barn I stab at thee.
You get what you deserve if you don't close the front door to that thing.
Yeah. But they drop the babies of this species, if they go in your ear, they make you very suggestible. And they suggest that they will be dropping some babies into Chekhov and Dathan's ears. And I believe we have a clip of that.
Khan, listen to me.
These are pets, of course. Not white. Domesticated.
Khan, Captain Kirk was only doing his duty.
This helmet's pretty big. You could have put the full-size one. I don't know how they do that special effect. That's amazing to me. This special effect I know all about. It's just a real big ear.
This isn't just scary for 1982. This is scary now.
It's contemporary scary.
Like, Star Trek First Contact got a PG-13 rating and this didn't.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
That little critter licked him on the earlobe before it went in.
That was a non-consensual lick.
That's at least got to get you PG-13. Just
right?
That. Like those giant rubber ears are like one of my favorite things in movie history. Just because of how the special effect right before that of the bug creeping across Chekhov's face is like a miracle. Like, it's a fake thing that looks like it's really crawling on his face. Yeah. And then they cut to giant rubber ear. I think you should have just left the ear out. Just cut to them screaming in their helmets and we don't see the bugs anymore, you know? One of my favorite photographs of all time is the picture of Hitchcock when they shot Dial M for Murder. It was a 3D film shot in back in the day on film. And so the only way to get like a macro shot of the finger going in and dialing M on the phone was to make a giant phone and a giant like rubber finger to stick in it. And so there's this amazing picture of Hitchcock like leaning over the phone, just like kind of like Hitchcocking out. And I always just picture...
I don't think he calls it that.
Just Shatner and Nimoy leaning on a giant ear together like, "Hey, buddy.
Do you think you took the ear home after the shoot?"
I would have that thing on my wall, man.
Did that thing ever reach the auction? Like, they have these Star Trek auctions. You think they auctioned off the ear?
I'm sure it caught fire in, like, 1987. after somebody tried to like freebase off of it or something. Every joke I do, I feel guilty because we're doing this in a house of worship.
But in a way, so is our show.
Yeah. That's the end of Act One, Adam. Do you want to break into the next act?
Okay.
So they call up Genesis, the Genesis Project from the Reliant, now that Khan knows all about Genesis, and Chekhov and Captain Dathan are under his sway. And Chekhov gets on the FaceTime with these folks, and it seems a little weird. I believe we have a clip.
This is USS Reliant.
Commander, we are receiving. This is regular one.
Did someone ask for arms?
Are you guys watching the gun show? Because it's over here.
En route, why? We weren't expecting you for another 3 months. Has something happened?
Nothing has happened. CT Alpha 6 has checked out.
Then I don't understand why you're coming.
We have received new orders. Upon our arrival at Regula 1, all materials
like that round screen.
Will be transferred to
good
this
look.
Ship for immediate testing on CT Alpha 6.
Who in the hell do they think they are?
Please be quiet. Commander Chekhov. This is
the guy with the arms just starts flexing.
I knew something was up right away because no one's ever that happy to talk to me on the phone. I would suspect something.
Seems weird.
Yeah.
This movie really flips a deeply carved Star Trek trope on its head in that there's an older lady scientist with a young, fuckable male assistant.
They did it the one time and never again.
Yeah. A couple years later when they were starting TNG and like pitches for scripts started to go around, they're like, okay, so there's like an older lady scientist. I'm going to stop you right there.
We pretty do, derivative, honestly.
We do crusty dude scientists and only crusty dude scientists on this show. But this announcement that the Genesis Project is going to be kind of summarily seized by Starfleet really pisses these people off.
And it introduces a really nice tension between like science and military.
Right, which like really fleshes out some of the world, like the idea that the Federation and Starfleet, like what, how do those things interact? How do these people think of themselves?
Right.
Like, and David Marcus is like a really like stridently anti-military dude. He does not like that that old Boy Scout James T. Kirk. He's super suspicious of being involved with Starfleet in any way, and that's like. Like, how many times in Trek have we met people like that? Like, the people that live in the Federation that don't dig Starfleet.
His mom's been programming him with this anti-Starfleet bias.
But she's like, but she's pro-Kirk.
Oh, she's real pro-Kirk.
I mean, like, yeah, so Admiral Kirk with all these cadets are on the shakedown cruise with the Enterprise. Like, they're just... they're just like piloting it around the neighborhood, right? With all these like young kids that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, there's like a steering wheel at every station, like a driver's ed car.
Yeah, the passenger side brake pedal
right.
is like a real giveaway. But Carol Marcus blows in a call to Kirk that's like, hey, like, why are you taking my science experiment away from me? And he goes to talk to Spock, and he's like, hey, so I think we probably got to go look into this because of this, of the, like, highly sensitive nature of this science experiment and these people saying that I gave this order that I don't remember giving.
Yeah. And, this is a great example of, like, teaching the characters to teach the viewer.
Yeah. And Kirk is like, so I'll be just hanging out in my room. You're the captain. You do the thing. And Spock is like, no, man. You're the senior officer, and I think you should be the captain on this one. So he's back in the saddle, baby.
Spock has no vanity about this at all.
Yeah, I mean, he says as much. He's a Vulcan. He doesn't have feelings like that.
Yeah. He's a pretty great friend.
Yeah. But so, like, they've got to
I mean, is there any length he wouldn't go as a friend? I think that's very much in question at this point in the film.
Shit, dog. But so they have to go look into this, and Spock is like, hey, man, like, I want to go help you find your Sega Genesis or whatever, but I don't understand why we're using the flagship to do it. And he's like, oh, no, no, it's something different. It's just called... And so Kirk wants to show Spock and Chekhov the YouTube video about how... about what Genesis is.
So there's like a 30-second credit card ad before before they see the Carol Marcus dissertation.
Yeah, and Spock is like, actually, it's like pretty much worth it to spend the $10 a month to get the ads taken off. I mean...
Luke, have you ever had lounge access at an airport? It's pretty nice.
It's pretty nice. Great, yeah. It amortizes nicely if you travel quite a bit.
For bathroom reasons alone, very worth it.
But Kirk has to do the retinal scan to get in, and I believe we have a clip of that.
Request security procedure and access to Project Genesis summary.
Identify for retinal scan.
Kirk, Admiral James Teed.
Now, William Shatner is famously vain.
Yeah.
Why would he allow that screen grab to be used for that?
Bill, we want you to kind of think about nothing for this. Or if not nothing, something very dumb.
This is one of those examples of, like, Star Trek predicting the technology future. Like, the idea of unlocking something with your face is a thing that those of us who are wealthy can enjoy right now.
That's true. Like, and it doesn't even take as long as, like, engage security protocol, Captain, you know, Captain James Kirk T or whatever. Like,
yeah, like, why is he talking? The computer's asking for a retinal scan.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, if you have an iPhone X, you can unlock it with your face right now, and it's very quick and easy.
And I gotta say, like, Ben, you should really talk, because your unlock face is not great. Just clear your mind.
I was thinking about something very dumb when I set that phone up. I happen to know that you were thinking about something even dumber, though, Adam, when you set your phone up.
Oh, Siri. She's super generous.
Yeah. I like that it's also pixelated, though.
You know how, like, in the magic wand tool in Photoshop, like, it sometimes cannot grab the edge of a thing?
Yeah.
Clearly, that did not grab an edge of a thing. Are my graphic professionals in the house?
We do get a rundown of what Genesis is, and it's a missile that you can shoot at a planet, or any, like, mass of matter, and it will rearrange that matter into a planet that has life growing on it. Like, it's life-generative properties are, like, the main thing about it. And their idea is, like, this is a overpopulation solution, which is, like, I mean, when this movie came out, like, the one-child policy in China was, like, a pretty new thing. Like, the population bomb was, like, a major, like, thing in the news, a major, like, thing in the zeitgeist, and this movie is, like, I think that's what this is talking about. But, like, Bones is, like, freaking out about the like, you know, like, he sees the potential negative uses of this right away, and Spock
it's gonna,
like,
put him out of a job, is what I think.
It's interesting though that Spock is like, yeah, like it'll kill everybody on a planet if you shot it at the planet. And he's like, that! You don't want to kill everybody on a planet, do you? Spock's like, I'm not passing judgment on killing off everybody on a planet. I'm merely stating. Why are you? He's like the concern troll of the future.
Spock is like, life is totally replaceable and impermanent. This is something I plan on proving a little later on.
But so that's the MacGuffin. Like, we actually get the explanation of what the MacGuffin is, and we're headed out to Regula One to get it so that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands, right?
I really feel like there's a market for this missile, right?
Yeah.
Like, outside of its clear military use, I feel like it has an application for the man about town who wants to either repopulate something as large as a planet or a space roughly the size of like 50 yards by 50 yards.
Yeah.
Maybe in a semi-Malibu configuration.
Uh-huh. Like maybe if he really missed his wife.
Director Markish, if there's some sort of waiting list for this technology, I want to be first.
This is not some kind of corporate espionage thing. I'm just getting pretty tired of the, like, keeping two things in my mind. I'm keeping the Rishan doll animate and aware, but also trying to ignore the fact that I know that she's fake. And if I could just have a bit of Malibu and Rishan back to myself and not have to be kind of... It's the cognitive dissonance that I'm trying to do away with.
Look, I don't want to be a problem customer.
And I'm not... Cognitive dissonance not as a dunk on Deanna Troi, who is trying to shut this awful music out of her mind right now. I understand that is very painful for her.
Many people buy generic... I want Malibu only.
Oh, you got a little Rangmius in there.
I did.
Oh. So they head out to Regula One, which is where the Genesis Project is. And on their way out there, they get they run into a familiar ship, right?
This is like one of those classic, like, Jeep passing another Jeep on the highway, like, given the flashers or, like, the what's up. I've never owned a Jeep. I don't know what you do to another Jeep person. You just give it one of those.
My...
Yeah, Jeep, right? Cool. Is that the Renegade? My, version of that?
My parents...
Rubicon.
Rubicon, yeah. That's that one, yeah. My parents had the second model year of the Prius, and when I would, like, borrow Dad's car to, like, go do an errand or whatever, like, the number of, like, super, like, bought-in eco guys that would, like, give me the thumbs up from their other Prius, like, at the intersection was like, hi. Like every intersection, because I was in the Bay Area, like it was just relentless, and I was like, I'm also pro environment, but I am not on whatever team you're on, dude.
Did anyone ever get in your car thinking you were a Lyft?
That didn't exist, man. That didn't exist.
Did anyone want to get in your car because they wanted to?
No. I was a very late bloomer, Adam.
I know. Me too. I heard a laugh from the crowd from a friend that I know who knew me in junior high and high school. Who knows that to be true? But I've got dirt on you too, man.
Let's see these ships meeting each other in space, Adam.
They still haven't raised their shields. Raise up.
Their shields are going up.
Lock phasers on target. Locking phasers on target.
They're locking phasers. Ray shields.
Fire!
bangers left and right.
We've seen that targeted on an Enterprise before. That's the grundle of the Enterprise, right?
Very sensitive, very sensitive.
As soon as you hit in between the nacelle and the body, that's where you're powdering that up before you go out on a trip around the galaxy, right?
Yeah, you don't want you don't want drive section itch. You don't want to buy an antifungal cream for the lower section of your ship.
Can we talk about Joaquin's line reading on the shield raising?
Everything about Joaquin's performance and the framing of Joaquin in every shot is perfect.
He's my favorite part of this film.
He's fucking great. He fucking steals the show.
It's like he's going for commercial work after this film.
Like, Khan is literally like pelvic thrusting fire and Joaquin is in the background like being amazing.
Yeah.
Being distractingly amazing. this is a, like, I think that there was a little bit of a missed opportunity in this scene because, like, they spend a lot of time talking about there's a bunch of cadets on this ship, and then they get out there and the Reliant is behaving in a way that is not, like, standard Starfleet procedure, and Savick is like, hey, like, the guidelines in the rule book say put the shields up, like, go to an alert status, and Kirk is like, pipe down, like, you don't know anything. But then when they start getting shot, like, we don't get any of the, like, panic of, like, I've never actually done this for real before, I've only done Kobayashi Maru hangs, like, and I think that would, like, add to the scene, like, this is a ship that is being run by cadets. They're not battle-hardened the way the crew of the original series is.
That's a great point, because, like, they only turn the cadet status into a positive in Savick. Like, oh,
right.
she's by the book, and that's great.
She recently read the driver's manual.
It should be a total liability at every station on the ship.
Right, like, just from a not having a muscle memory thing. And also, like, this bridge has far fewer labels, so it would be very confusing. Just
people are, like, openly smoking on the bridge. Like, I didn't see a sign.
This is cool, right?
I can seat myself then?
So the only way they get out of this is that they, you know, Khan gets on the screen and he's like kind of gloating over his victory. And he's like, I wanted to let you know that I was the one that killed you. And now, like, you know, send me everything you have on the Genesis project. And they do the thing where they're like, you know, talking off mic to each other. And I'm like, punch in the code to his luggage and let's fucking shoot this asshole.
They pan from Kirk back to the turbo lift, and Scotty is like trading the weight of his nephew on both arms. Like, where do you want me to put this again?
Yeah.
So just in the freezer or something? He is in so much trouble with his sister also.
Yeah. So they catch the Reliant with their pants down. They battle it to a draw, and the ships drift apart in space. And then the door does open on the turbo lift, and Scotty's like, hey, this did not go great. But then the next scene is he's taking that kid to sick bay, and he's like on the slab going like, what happened? Scotty, you, like, if he's still alive. Like,
time is everything right now. It's like having a stroke.
Like, when he comes up to the bridge, like, the kid is covered in hamburger meat, and it's just like, that guy is dead. And then you see that he's alive, like, 2 seconds later, he's like,
are we sure that it's his own internal organs, or is it the Polish sausage that everyone wears for rations on their engineering
blew
uniform?
Apart and just got all over him.
I can see that being very confusing.
But the ships are fought to a stalemate and drifting apart in space, and we break in to Act 3.
They get to Regula One, and it is a fucking bloodbath.
Yeah.
It is a Predator 2 style skinned bodies strung up from the ceiling. And again, regular PG.
Yeah.
Like,
they've turned the
no bloody PG-13, no bloody R.
plain old PG-13. Yeah, it's they have turned the squeaky clean Starbase into an abattoir, and there's like no signs of life on regular one until they open the offset smoker that Khan stuffed Chekhov and Terrell into.
You want to low and slow, yeah. Those two.
Yeah. Chekhov, your meat is positively falling off the bone. Delicious.
They...
Do you recommend a vinegar sauce or something a little sweeter?
They kind of present themselves as okay, except when everyone doesn't look at them.
Right, yeah, like when they're speaking, they can kind of act normal, but yeah. Then when the question goes to the other one, they like kind of turn to the camera like...
Like whenever my wife is telling me about her day.
That got an O from the crowd.
That was a real slam dunk contest kind of reaction.
Yeah. Oh, he hit the three on his wife. But they, you know, they get the news from Chekhov and Terrell that that it is Khan, it's Khan's buddies, they're back, and they're very angry at Kirk. And then they kind of work out, like, oh, everybody probably beamed down to the regular asteroid, which phase two of the Genesis Project is to test this, like, rewriting the matrix on the inside of a dead asteroid. So they test this theory out by all beaming down together. And there's a great little Star Trek fight where David Marcus like jumps out and tries to beat up Kirk, and he's like, "Nah, kid, that's not gonna happen today."
Kirks don't use knives.
No,
they use fists held together like this.
And he does.
Really puts him down.
Yeah, it's like Kirk's like. They spend so much time talking about Kirk being old at the beginning of this movie, which I think is a real, like, Hollywood in its bubble, going like, he's 50 years old? Like, you can't put a 50-year-old person as the leading man of a film? He's so old! I mean, I guess if we're gonna do it, we just have to talk about how old he is the entire time.
It doesn't seem like he would have a lot of range of motion with the Starfleet cowichan that he's wearing.
But he kicks ass!
He totally does.
And, like... I think this scene maybe is him just making the case for, I'm going to play this character for another 30 years.
Is this the best jacket in Starfleet ever?
Yeah, they were selling one at a Star Trek Las Vegas for like $2,000, and I was like, maybe.
I would love for us to go on vacation, but this jacket...
No, honey, we gotta eat rice and beans again tonight. Yeah. I'm saving up.
Tour, kind of a wash. I don't know if you saw the jacket.
In that way, it came out ahead in a big way. But yeah, the other thing that happens in this scene is that the Nub and Bugs start to wear off, and like there's the confrontation where Terrell kind of announces that Kirk and gang are totally screwed, and I think we should take a look at a clip of that.
Is that David?
Mother, he killed everybody we left behind.
Well, of course he didn't. David, you're just making this harder.
I'm afraid it's even harder than you think, Doctor. Please.
Was that gonna pan down to his dick?
That is a pornographic line of dialogue.
Your Excellency, have you been listening?
Smartwatches get way worse in the future.
You, you son of a bitch!
He killed Wilbur Valderrama on the gore setting.
You gotta punch it up to gore up those arms, right?
Yeah. But they take out they take out Captain Terrell, and then the nubbin bug, like seeing the writing on the wall, quits Chekhov's ear. Like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. So we go back to another close.
It's got a cardboard box of brain stem.
These post-its are mine.
I actually brought this stem from home.
This is from home. And they phaser that, so they're kind of on to Khan now. Like, they know that that Khan was behind the whole thing, but they don't have any way to prevent Khan from beaming up the Genesis device and the zombie box that controls it, which the scientists like probably should not have kept together. Like the zombie box, another unlabeled piece of equipment. Maybe leave it on the station. Like, you know, they don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you want to keep your ammunition and your gun separate, right?
Right. This is just good safety, right? Safety practice. But yeah, so they're kind of screwed, right? They're marooned. The Enterprise is in orbit somewhere, but it is badly out of shape. They transmit a little code about this, but then they have some time to kill, so they go hang out in the Genesis cave.
Just gonna eat some apples in the Genesis cave. Hey, can I just take any apple I want? That's probably what Kirk's asking, right?
I think we have a clip of that, right? Am I wrong? No.
Khan, bloodsucker.
Oh, yeah. We have a clip of them being angry about that. Not expecting you to be alive, frankly. I defy anyone to tell me that that is not the funniest line read in that scene.
I feel like Nicholas Meyer on set every day was like, take all the time you need. Really relish in these moments.
I wish I could have been a fly on the wall in Shatner's trailer when he realized that Kirk was going to individually disagree with every single word in Khan's sentence.
He's so great.
He's amazing.
I don't think it gets said enough. He is fantastic in this movie.
Yeah.
He really is.
And the scene in the Genesis cave is like his tour de force, because it is all like, it is an amazing amount of character building that happens in one apple-eaten scene where, like, you know, Kirstie Alley is still there and she's like, listen, guys, I know that our ship, we just got the drop on our ship and we're marooned on this rock in space, but I am dying to know how to pass that test back at school. And so we find out that Kirk cheated on Kobayashi Maru. We also find out, like, about how, because David Marcus, the kid that tried to beat him up, is his son. Carol Marcus is David Marcus' mother. And she asked Kirk to stay out of their lives.
And he did.
He did. Like, he is like a deadbeat dad with consent, I guess.
It's a not unhealthy depiction of, like, a little bit of a broken family.
Right, like they knew ahead of time that they had pretty incompatible lifestyles and that there wasn't going to be enough change. Like, they weren't neither of them going to be capable of enough change to meet in the middle somewhere. And so they just made, like, a rational decision about that, which, like...
You know what I love?
It's so hard for this scene to exist where you don't wind up hating Kirk at the end.
Right. How did they do that?
It's a magic trick.
I'll tell you how they do it, though, is because Carol never puts his balls in the fire in that FaceTime about the Genesis weapon. It's totally professional in that conversation.
Yeah.
She's like... Fuck you for trying to take the missile from me. She's never... And also, fuck you for not being on time with your child support. Like, she never makes it personal like that. And I think that only does Kirk a favor as a character.
Right. I mean, it makes her, like, a really interesting character that was, like, that had the strength to say, like, I don't think that, like, you and I can make this work, but I want to raise this child. That's really interesting. And Kirk's Shatner's performance as Kirk in this scene is also amazing because it's this like, I'm a cheater and I also wasn't really in my child's life and agreed to be isolated from my child in a way that is like a little weird, frankly. But you're like, this is like part of what makes me a hero somehow.
Like, it's funny, but it works.
I don't know why it works.
He should be so hateable right now.
Yeah, like the like math problem of this scene like is like just filling up every green chalkboard in the university, and it still somehow
it's
works.
Great.
It's amazing. Well, that is the end of that act, and we're on into the next.
He cheated. I don't believe in the no-win scenario. He cheated. Change the conditions of the test. I don't like to lose.
Turns out the Enterprise was not as beat up as they led everybody listening into their radio transmissions believe.
Scotty's just shoving bodies into compartments to, like, make electrical connections.
I'll apologize to your sister later, laddie.
Do we cut back to engineering in this film after that initial attack?
I don't think we do.
I don't think we do either.
I was very curious about that engineering where they've like turned the warp engine on its side. Like,
do you think it's one of those public bathrooms that like the door closes and it automatically cleans itself? Like the blast door comes down and all of the blood is just magically washed off of every panel?
Yes, I think that's...
Also like every public bathroom? That I've ever used.
Gross.
I have to go to the bathroom a lot.
You want me to vamp?
No, I'm good. I think I can hold out.
All right.
This isn't a bucket show, Ben.
So they get this idea. We're gonna make this work by retreating to the Mutara Nebula. There's a nearby nebula that will wipe out sensors. It will degrade the effectiveness of these ships enough that we'll be on fairly even footing, and we actually know how to fly starships, unlike the Khan gang, or whatever you call it, the superhumans. I don't know, what are they called? Do they have a name in Space Seed?
No.
Okay.
Do they? Yeah, no.
Yeah. Anyways, those guys that like to rub a lot of arm butter all over themselves will be on fairly even footing with them. So they bug out to the Mutara Nebula, and this is a moment where Joaquin, like, he's been kind of riding for, like, screw Kirk, like, we have a starship, let's go have starship adventures, which is a show I would totally watch, but... But Khan is on a revenge spree, and Kirk is the target of that revenge. Like, he does not feel like his job at Regula is done until Kirk is dead. So the Enterprise like heads for this nebula, and Joaquin is like, dude, let's walk away, man. Like, we don't need to pick this fight, and that's not what Khan is about. And so they follow him in, and...
Joaquin is low-key the smartest guy in his crew.
Yeah.
He should be the captain.
He sees it coming from a mile away, too. Like, he's riding for that point of view from jump.
How does Joaquin know how to do anything on that ship, also?
Well, they're all, like, super intelligent, right? Just Khan is the super intelligent.
He's like the guy who gets the VCR and knows how to program it right away.
Yeah. I love the conceit of, like, these people are super intelligent, but also believe in a kind of monarchy style of government. Like,
yeah.
Khan has been in charge forever and will be in charge forever. That seems weird, right?
That's, like, number five on the list of weird things about him and that group.
But in the Mutara Nebula, this turns into a really awesome submarine movie.
Yeah, like, if you don't like Star Trek films, you might like a submarine film.
Yeah,
and this is the part of it that it totally pivots into it.
The idea is that they have no sensors. They can't see anything on the view screen. They can't get a position on the other ship. So there's this amazing sequence of special effects where the ships are, like, going through the clouds and, like, you see them, you know, passing over each other, the light shining through. It's really like some of the most stunning special effects stuff in the movie. But we also see like what they're trying to see on the view screens, and that kind of is illustrative of how crippled they are. So I believe we have a clip of that.
Tactical. Inoperative.
Still hungry.
Totally scrambled.
Watch your fist on her.
As I feared, sir, not functional.
I would direct your attention to the location. That's fun.
My wife is Jewish, and I was like texting her pictures of the space before the show, if she knew what we were doing in here right now.
She should never see this show. My wife already said, God, I've got two opportunities to see it, and I'm busy both times.
There's a pretty funny moment in this where Spock is like, you know, Captain, I've noticed that they're thinking rather two-dimensionally. And Kirk is like, I've got a great idea. Let's take this battle three-dimensional. Like, yeah, that was kind of my idea, Cap. He doesn't have an ego. He, you know, he lets him get away with that stuff. But yeah, so that's how they get the drop on the Reliant. They come at him from the Z-axis, and that pretty much does
it. Did you learn that today on your tour? You learned what a Z-axis was at NASA?
Yeah. It was a consolation for not showing me the sets where they shot the Apollo landing.
We're a soundstage away from Space Force, aren't we?
Not a bad point. But there's a the scene where the giant foam girder falls on Joaquin is in there. That's really sad.
Is girder falling on important person a trope? I love it every time.
Did you get the sense that Joaquin, played by Judson Scott, was Brandoing in that moment?
Yes. You know what? I didn't think about it until you brought it up, but yeah, I do. I think that's.
Because, like, I mean, like, they come fast and furious at this point in the film because, I mean, like, so almost everybody on the Reliant is dead, but Khan has the zombie box up on the bridge, and he, like, does all the beeps and boops to turn it on, and he set the Genesis device to go off, and it's a suicide mission now. Like, it's on the Reliant, he's setting it off, but the Enterprise doesn't have warp speed, so they don't have, like, they can't close the distance between the kill radius of the Reliant and, like, safe space fast enough. And, like, David Marcus is up on the bridge talking to him through this, like, you know, he's there to Genesis-splain them.
He does not have his confident sweater wrapped around his neck.
Yeah, that got blown off in one of the bangers.
It's the sweater of deep pessimism. Yeah. That just got tied around there.
Yeah, but you know, they're talking through the math of this, and they're like, it doesn't work. Like, we're done. Like, there's no way to escape this. And this is a movie about no-win situations. Like, and it's about Kirk not believing in no-win situations. And they kind of abandon hope here, and wordlessly, they just kind of all look at each other and digest the fact that this is it.
David Marcus is like, you know, Dad, you can't escape me either. I'm right here.
I exist.
Look at this. This is you. This is your fault. I hate you.
And also wordlessly, Spock gets up and excuses himself from the bridge.
There's a lot of non-verbal stuff happening here. There's the defeat of a David Marcus going, we're kind of fucked, like fuck shoulders. There's the empty chair that Spock leaves.
Which is like super wrinkly because the set department didn't do a great job with the upholstery on the bridge.
That's why you don't smoke on the bridge.
Yeah.
The upholstery gets all fucked up.
It ruins it.
Yeah.
But Spock goes down. He kind of barges through engineering. He goes into the phone booth and he re-somethings the dilithium chamber.
He puts on two giant of gloves.
Yeah.
Why don't they make a whole suit out of gloves? He said, dad jokingly.
And they warp out of there just in time. Big explosion in space. It's a crazy moment. It's they save the day. Like, there's a bunch of huzzas. And then up on the radio, Scotty calls Kirk down to engineering. And this is an amazing scene because this is, like, Nimoy... I, from what I've read, insisted on Brandoing in this scene, and it's why it's such an affecting moment.
I wonder if you're a viewer, if you feel like you're safe at this moment, like having already like fallen for the jangly keys in the beginning of the movie, like,
right.
Oh, well then like no one's going to die in this film.
But that's why he has to Brando,
yeah.
Because it like... When it blows up on the bridge and he's like, oh, like
that's
corny
cartoonish.
And silly.
Yeah.
But to like,
he's not doing that in this scene.
To Brando, you sell the, you guys, do people know the term Brandoing? Sorry. I'm
take him to film school, Ben.
This is a,
people really like the film terminology that we use on the show.
So, it's a little bit of jargon, and I think that like Hollywood doesn't love it to be out there, but I think you need to know the term to talk about this scene, because this is a technique that Marlon Brando made famous as a method actor, like coming out of the like Stanislavski and Meisner and all that stuff. Like, the idea is that when your character dies, to sell the emotional truth of that, you do what you do when you die. And that is evacuate your bowels. And so...
total bowel reversal?
And this is like the kind of commitment that Nimoy brought to this part.
It's what makes him great.
Yeah. And so there's like, we actually found like the live on set, because they loop it later.
Yeah. But you've got to loop it later. You can't use diegetic audio.
Yeah. So we have the audio of... Should we show it?
Yeah, this is an alternate audio track on the special edition.
Live long.
You know, they block that frame so that you can't tell he's not wearing pants.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that there's a drain on the floor of that room. When Shatner found out that Nimoy was going to Brando, like, he was like, we're favored nations, like, our contracts are the same. Like, I'm not going to let him, like, upstage me in this movie. Like, I am the hero of the movie. This is my movie. Like, and I think Spock is the hero of the movie, but Shatner's interpretation was different.
I think you can tell by looking at him that Shatner hits craft services pretty hard. But he was going, on a specific mission on the shooting day.
But so, like, Brandoing is not just when your character actually literally dies, it's also character death. It's the moment that you face real despair. And Kirk has a scene like that in this movie. And so, because he had heard that Nimoy was going to, he insisted that he got to do it too. I believe we have a clip. It's like you can smell it through space.
Ben, I just want to point out, there have been funerals here.
I feel terrible. So the Genesis device has gone off, and the cloud of gas coalesces, creates a new planet, and it's like coming together in space, and we're kind of dealing with the departure of a dear character, and so they have a little. I mean, speaking of funerals, they have a little memorial service on the ship, and this is like another, like just from a character development, like you don't do character development like this late in a movie usually.
Right.
But like almost every character is doing something in this scene. You know, Carol Marcus is having almost like a, like, you know, like a partner losing their partner kind of emotional arc. Savick sheds a tear, which is like bonkers because she's talking about how emotional everybody is at the beginning of the movie. She's supposed to be like the super Vulcan. And Kirk...
No cadets attend because they're all dead.
Kirk does the super insulting Spock was human.
His eulogy is awful. This is not a good moment for Kirk.
Spock would be horrified. And Scotty plays his bagpipes, and
everyone brings something to the table.
Well, yeah, Spock was from the Highlands of Vulcan, so it's an apt tribute. Let's see that clip.
Of all the souls I have encountered in my travels, this was the most.
Others.
Marcus is so polite. She never cracks. I learned two things from that scene, Ben.
Yeah.
One, there are still cadets alive on the ship. Two, it is very hard to play bagpipes with 9 fingers.
Scotty's just like, we're going to have another memorial service down in the galley for my nephew. if anybody wants to come, I put out some, like, cut vegetables and...
Do you think he's just a puck in a disposal?
Damn.
They got a lot of bodies to bury, yeah. Ben. Like...
A lot of also unaccounted, like the crew of the Reliant was apparently marooned on SETI Alpha 5, and like no mention has ever been made of them since we found that out. Like they're just like,
No one's in a hurry to do anything.
Because the end of the movie is just Kirk like hanging out on the bridge, like getting a little misty-eyed, watching the planet form and like turn into a life-bearing Genesis planet and saying how young he feels. And then we get the camera swooping down through the clouds and finding the Mark VI torpedo tube that Spock is in.
What do you make of this ending, though? Like, and its happiness relative to everything that had happened only 5 minutes before?
Well, I'll give you two answers. When I was a kid, I was profoundly confused by this ending because I didn't know that Mark and then a number meant like an addition of something. So I was like, why did they call him Mark Iv? His name is Spock. I don't get it.
Up until this moment, I thought you were like in special like smart classes as a kid.
I was not.
I'm totally shattered by this. I thought you were gifted. You were an idiot.
But also, like, the emotion that Kirk is going through as, like, a... Like, there's catharsis in this, and that he's, like, wishing his friend goodbye, but also seeing the possibility in the future is, like, really beautiful and somehow works. I think it's the strength of Shatner's performance, but it is a hard moment to imagine another actor selling.
I don't know if it's just me looking at this film with modern eyes, but I don't understand, like, did they ever have a choice in how Kirk treated this scene? Like, could he have ever gone dark and sad and have it end like that? Because this feels like the counterpoint at the beginning of killing off the entire crew and going, just kidding. His joy at the end of this film, I think, betrays what could have been a fun surprise for the third film and just ruins that completely.
I don't know, because I think you can read the text in a dark way, but I think that that's not Kirk's way. Like, he sees the opportunity in everything, and this is like one of the few times in the history of Kirk where he does despair, and like Spock kind of taught him that there really isn't a no-win situation in sacrificing himself. Like, this was Kirk's real-world Kobayashi Maru, and it took Spock to show him how right he was when he took the test back at Starfleet. Did you like the movie, Adam?
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. I was still thinking about Mark Iv. Do you like the movie? Yeah, of course I did. It's the second best Star Trek film there is. It's great.
I would say third, but it's up there for sure.
It's better than Whales.
It's not better than Whales.
It is utterly better than Whales.
People like whales. Learn to pander at them.
Did I just hear boo whales? I think I did.
I really like the movie too. I think it's such a foundational film for me. Like, I think this is the movie that I really got to know the TOS crew in as a kid. And like all of the mythology around Kirk and the Kobayashi Maru is like so fertile, and they use it like for so many things in like going forward in the Kirk mythos that that like this is like year zero for Kirk for me. And and I think that maybe like part of why I've had less of an easy time getting into TOS TV reruns or whatever.
Right.
But I love this movie, and I love what it sets up. Like, I love the adventure that this is the beginning of.
If you could measure value per scene, I feel like Shatner is almost on screen as much as Montalban, and he is squeezing every bit of charisma out of every scene.
Yeah.
He's great. They both are.
Montalban is awesome, too.
Yeah. Like,
they both kick a ton of butt in this movie.
Kirk does something that it takes, I don't know, like 100 years to happen again by destroying another Federation ship. Like, as midlife crises go, I feel like that's a pretty good one to get. Yeah. I mean, Picard had to do it as a Borg for that to work.
Yeah.
It's got to feel great.
Yeah.
And I like that part of it too.
Generations, like, hey, we've both.
Right? That should have been a bonding moment.
Adam, do you want to check and see if we have any P1s?
Oh yeah, we got to do that.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, the priority one messages that we're reading in today's show are going to support the National Center for Science Education. We are raising money for the cause of making science education abundant and non-controversial in this country, which I think is a good thing. Our first one.
And by that, we don't mean Space Force, right?
Our first one is, I didn't write down from. Matt? From Matt?
I put the two in the from and the thing. Did it not update for you?
It didn't update. Oh, it did. Okay. I'm guessing that's classified. Oh, I see. Okay. And it's two FODs who have filled out an SF86.
Oh, a lot of people get that reference.
Are we inside the QAnon conspiracy right now? It goes like this. I'm guessing the following P1 is not real, but it is really sponsored by Section 31. Is your agent's SCIF too small? Wish your ID card was just a mysterious jet black shield? Feel like there's gotta be something higher than TSSCI? Come join the intelligence agency that's really out of this world, and no, we don't mean the NRO. Section 31 is recruiting now. No need to apply. Our time-traveling recruiters will find you. Or they would if we weren't totally fictional. Enjoy the show. That's a lot of fun.
That was almost completely lost on me. I'm glad you enjoyed it, though.
That must be what it's like for my wife to hear an episode of The Greatest Generation.
My wife doesn't listen.
What the hell is a drunk Shimoda?
Ben, we have a second priority one message. It is from Adam Connor. It is for Brad and Sam, and it's actually written in script format with like all the script justifications
and there's
and character
parts,
names.
Parts for you and me.
Yeah, you want to take a run at this?
Let's do a read. Let's do a live read. This has definitely gone over the character limit, by the way. God damn it.
You told me you found Brad and Sam disrespectful.
Brad and Sam are disrespectful. It's a violation of basic decency, certainly, if not marital vows, as a person familiar with their friendship.
No, we're on the record here. You can't say after the fact as someone familiar.
I told you everything about Brad and Sam was off the record.
No, that's not true. That never happened.
Well, people do see Brad and Sam this way. People see them that way. I don't say so, but people see them that way.
But I'm saying we never discussed everything about Brad and Sam being off the record.
Fine. I never actually said what I think about Brad and Sam, and I won't pay the, and I won't say what I think about them, which tells you what I think about them.
And scene.
Some big fans of Kellyanne in the crowd tonight. Can't say I agree.
I didn't know that about Adam Connor.
Well, I believe we have one more segment tonight, Adam, and I have a question for you. Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I think I should have asked you that first.
Oh, do I go?
Given the order of operations of this slideshow we're running. Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
I did, Adam, and I also forgot to read our notes.
That's what they're there for.
That say where the clips are in order. It's got to go to Joaquin for me. Judson Scott, the actor that played him, is not credited in this movie because his agent apparently tried to play hardball with the studio, and one of his bluffs was like, you either put his name in the opening credit roll or you don't put his name in the movie, and they're like, fine, I guess if we won't.
Less work for us.
And that has got to have been a pretty uncomfortable red carpet screening.
Could you imagine?
Going to the premiere with your agent sitting next to you.
Friends and family, like,
sharing
ready.
A bucket of popcorn. So rough time for Judson Scott, but there's a scene with him that is just near and dear to my heart, and it is the scene where they punch in the garage door code on the Reliant and drop their shields. And I will show you a clip of that scene to illustrate what is so great about it. This didn't happen today, but most of the time when we do sound check and I'm up here like plugging all this shit in and you're in the back of the room going like, we can't hear you, Ben. I'm like, no! So in that moment, I really like, I felt seen by this film.
You do also wear like a leather vest at every sound check and like this weird like ring of shells on your head.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people thought those went out in the 90s. What my theory presupposes is maybe they didn't.
Joaquin's great in this movie. That's a great Shimoda.
Did you have a Shimoda, Adam?
I did.
I know I already asked you that.
I did, and it comes at kind of a strange time. Like, one of my favorite parts in this film is the scene where the Enterprise pulls out a space dock, the score swells. Like, I feel like the score should be billed above the title. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's triumphant and cool, and you get all the beauty shots of the Enterprise as she pulls out a space dock. But they cut to, in this daisy chain of edits, to someone that they left behind. And I also have a clip. That guy.
Wait.
One of the things that made me terrible at an office job was my constant lateness. And I saw that guy being left behind at space dock, and I was like, that is me. There is, like, I want 5 extra minutes of this scene after the Enterprise is just fucking gone. And he's just like,
ooh, I'm really gonna get it.
Like, he grabs his own handle.
And then, like, you could have, after the credits roll, a shot of that guy, like, opening the morning paper the next day and seeing what happened to the Enterprise and be like, ooh.
Bullet his wife dodged. Asked, like, how work was today, and he's like, fine, it was a normal day. Why are you asking? Get off my back.
Well, Adam, that's a great drunk Shimoda.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
And that brings us to the end of our program for the evening.
Is that really it? This was so much fun.
This was a lot of fun. DC, you guys really made it fun. We have a couple of thank yous.
Yeah, we couldn't do a show like this without you, all of our friends of DeSoto.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Thank you so much. We got to thank Rob, our producer, who is running the video down here. We also got to thank Trevor and Jordan, who helped run the sound and lights and stuff tonight. And it was really awesome the way they had this place set up for us.
Yeah, one of the best setups we've ever had, really.
You guys are laughing at this challenge coin that you're seeing on the screen behind me, and that is because we are going to be down at the merch table, which is downstairs where the bar is, and we'll be giving high fives and signing posters, and every challenge coin we sell, we donate a portion of the proceeds to the National Center for Science Education. We've also got t-shirts and posters and stuff, so come say hi after the show. We'd love to meet you. And that is the greatest generation. So we're going to leave you with some outro music composed by our buddy Adam Ragusea.
Yeah, we got to thank him too.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming out tonight, guys.
Good night, Washington, D.C.
Jim. Your name is Jim.
Who are you?
Who do you think I am?
Don't tell me. You're from outer space.
No, I'm from Iowa. I only work in outer space.
Oh.
Jack. James T.
I remember reading about your missions when I was in grade school.
James T.
Oh, really?
Captain James T. Kirk of the Enterprise.
Captain
James T. Kirk of the Enterprise.
NTC 1701. No bloody A, B, C, or D.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. I say.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.